Hey, it's another week. It's another episode of Shock and Chip and Mike Bilbo as well. And we're all grateful to be here. Mike, tell us about your evening as we record this on a Wednesday.
Tonight?
No, yesterday. And then lay out hour by hour your plans for the night.
Until you fall asleep.
I'm dragging a little this morning or this afternoon or this evening, whichever it is.
He named the whole day.
We're keeping him in it.
A testament to me dragging. Had a baseball game last night with a 3 o'clock start. I mean, 7 o'clock. God, I can't get anything right. A 7 o'clock start. And we got out of there about, I want to say I got home about 11 o'clock last night. That's a little past daddy's bedtime.
Was it extra innings or something?
No. It was a 9-inning game. But it takes it out of me, man. I'm not the spring chicken I once was. I remember back in the day. I remember one day when I was at Tulsa, we had won the women's basketball championship down in Dallas, and we flew back, and our plane had been delayed because of weather, and we got back about 2 o'clock in the morning, and a couple of staff people, we knew a guy that owned an establishment, and he kept it open a little late for us, and we went in there, and we were there till about 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning. And I was bright and early, 8 o'clock in the morning, that staff meeting, man. And
yeah,
I could do that when I was like 28, 30.
Oh, the good old days.
I cannot do that now.
When did y'all cross that line? When was that threshold when you just couldn't throw it down?
It depends on what you're doing. Like, if you're out and you're having some nice adult beverages, or is it just like you had the other night, just a long night of working. Like, I think you got to clarify which one. Like,
all right, I'm talking about going out and tying one on. Because for me, it was like
a couple years ago. You know, they had the big NAB broadcasting convention, and in the before times, it was every April. I think it's in October this year, but then it'll go back to April. And we would go every year, and that's where we look and see what equipment we need to buy. We do a lot of meetings, things like that. But it's a huge industry event. There's a lot of parties. There's a lot of free food, a lot of free drinks, a lot of getting to go to cool places you don't normally get to go to. And I knew that I had hit that point where I was at a place at Caesar's Palace. And it was on the nightclub at Caesar's Palace that overlooks the strip. And this was on a Sunday night. And it had tons of free food. It had open bar, whatever you wanted. And it got to be about 9:30. And I'm like, fellas, peace. I'm going to go back to the hotel and take a nap. Now, because you're also fighting that time change, too, out in Vegas.
That's true.
I was like, nope, can't do it. You guys have fun. And I woke up and I was great the next morning. And all my friends were dragging. And I was like, that was probably 44, 45, right about there.
Okay.
Yeah. That's about when I hit it.
Oof. I don't know if like, it's not that I can't handle like a night out like that, but I definitely am more aware that I've had like two or three beers or whatever the next day. And that's just kind of a surprise.
Here's what I've found out is there are times where I feel like I've had something to drink even when I haven't.
Oh, yeah.
So I'll wake up the next day and I'll be like, I have a headache. Stomach's upset. My throat's dry.
All
I had was like a Diet Coke and a hamburger yesterday.
I think my tolerance is crazy high. Like, I could have multiple at a night and then wake up the next morning at 7, 8 o'clock and be good to go. My wife will look over and be like, what is wrong with you? Like, how do you function? I'm like, I don't know.
DJ Shockley.
I don't know if it's just like years of being used to it or what.
It's a highly toned and just an athlete. You're just an athlete, man.
This is the peak of the male existence, DJ Shockley.
Now, it was a Toby Keith song. It was like, I'm not as good now as I was, but I'm as good once as I ever was.
Yeah,
that's every once in a while.
One shot.
I'll catch lightning in a bottle, and I'm like, let's go.
Yeah.
But it's few and far between now.
Wes, you talking about drinking a couple beers. Like, I can't do that. Like, that take too long. I need get to the action.
Yeah.
And I need to feel it right away.
I'm with you. And one more reason to do that. I don't know about y'all. If I have one beer, I want to go to sleep. But if I have like a couple, I'm like ready to socialize and stuff. But there's something about just like one beer is like taking a melatonin or something.
Does the time of the year factor into this at all? Because with me, it kind of does.
What do you mean? Like summertime, like, you're able to go a little bit?
Summertime, and let's say I'm mowing the yard, or let's say I'm at the lake or at the beach or something.
It's like a water.
I feel like I can have a lot of to drink, and it doesn't affect me at all. Now I know I'm hot, I'm sweating usually. I'm gonna say
you're
gonna like
sweat
that.
It out. Yeah, you're gonna sweat it out.
Yeah, but it's always like a light beer or a clear liquid, and then when it gets colder in the winter, then it's kind of like, well, it's the brown liquor and maybe less beer. And because it feels a little more cozy.
Yeah.
There's no time of the year for me. Brown liquor goes in the summer. It goes in the winter. It goes in the spring. It don't matter. I like me some good brown liquor. I ain't gonna lie.
I like this conversational train.
I want that. I want DJ saying that. That's gonna be my ringtone now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I ain't no big beer dude. I had a partnership with a beer company a little while back, and they used to send me tons of it. I just used to give it away to everybody because I never drank it.
I like beer the way people like wine. Like, I will go and I will go. I will try. Let me find what's the most obscure beer on your menu, and I will do that. And sometimes it's great, and sometimes it's like, no. I had this one beer once that my brother bought me for my birthday. And he had spent a lot of money, and this is when he was still in college, so he didn't have any money. He spent like $14 on this bottle of beer, and it was like a triple Bock, which is, you know, you've heard of like Shiner Bock or something. This is a triple, and I guess it's a brewing process. This stuff looked and tasted like soy sauce.
Soy sauce.
It's the worst stuff I ever had. So.
$14 for it.
So, you know, it's a little bit fraught with dangers. Like, give me the weirdest stuff on your menu. Like, sometimes you find a killer, and then sometimes you find something that's just garbage.
Yeah.
But that's how kind of I am with beer. I do that like my wife and I went to Napa, and she's a wine drinker. She's all into it. I'm not really a wine guy, so I tried it a little bit, and I was just like, it's okay, you know. But I found a couple of real good craft breweries in Napa, and that was pretty nice too.
So you like the craft brews, but you're not like, you don't have like a list at home where you're like checking off
the
ones you've had.
It's not like that. I've got a couple of go-tos. Mm. I'm a little bit of a snob, but not too much of a snob. I'll drink your average stuff that you get in a convenience store if I have to. But I like the, you know, kind of the weirder ones. So this one's brewed with an aged pineapple extract from Hawaii or something.
Now, you know what was cool? We went, so when I had, when we could go on the road, had a Kentucky game, and we went to
distillery.
Like a bourbon brewery, distillery place, and they took us behind where, you know, they started from the beginning of the process, and it was clear to start with, and I was like, what?
Yeah.
And it looks like rubbing.
It looks straight up. Looks like rubbing alcohol.
Yeah, it does. And it was like potent. I'm talking about like they was like, don't drink too much. Only take a sip. And I was like, man, the process is crazy. And they showed me all the barrels that are in and how long they've been sitting there. I was like, man, before I get to the store, I had to go through all this. This is crazy.
Yeah,
you not even want to drink it. I'm like, man,
we went
a lot
to
of work went
to
this.
We went to Scotland on a family trip. Ooh. And went to the Glenlivet. Scotch distillery.
I want to do that. Go to like Islay and all those distilleries there.
There, I mean, you could do an entire trip just like you could in Kentucky, and I'd love to do that. That's
a great documentary. There's a great documentary on Netflix, and it may just be called Scotch.
Yeah.
That was fantastic. We was talking about all the distilleries there, and this one particular distillery that they had kind of brought back from the dead. I would love to go do that.
Those families, I mean, the families run them and everything. But, I mean, that's why you don't think as of Lexington as you're growing up. You hear about like going to Nashville for Vandy or wherever, but Lexington is like that sneaky road trip if you're a Georgia fan or SEC fan, where if you like bourbon, I mean, you could make 3-4 days out of that.
I've never done Lexington for football. I've done it for basketball. I've never done it for football.
I went when I was a student, and we found one from this distillery.
I got it over here now.
I had a friend of mine. She got married in a distillery. Ooh. I thought that was kind of. They got married there, like in this outdoor part, and then they had the reception, and they had a reception hall there. I guess they did a pretty nice events business after hours and stuff, and they would do tours as part of the reception. It was pretty cool.
That's the end of a party.
We each got a little our own little personalized bottle of bourbon.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. It's pretty cool.
I see. My wife watches these shows sometimes, and it seems like all they do is drink wine. I've always wanted to find some good wine sometime, but I never know what kind of wine to get or to ask for. I'm like, I've had red wine before, and I'm like, oh, this is super dry, or I've had some white, and I'm like, oh, this is bitter. Like, I don't know what kind of wine to ask for. So you wine connoisseurs of the world, let me know.
Well, do you like sweet stuff? I'm not a sommelier or anything, but you know,
I can't even pronounce that.
The whiter wines, you know, you got some sweet ones. Pinot Grigio is a little bit drier. Rosé. I think if you want to start,
I saw Rosé at QT wines, down in Fayetteville once.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, because he lived around the corner in Evander's house.
No doubt. Rosé.
He's got it.
He's kind of my style icon right now.
Mansion. Have y'all seen the videos of his mansion? How he's riding bikes around inside of the kitchen and everything?
Well, is that still Evander's old place? Yeah,
I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's gigantic, dude. Yeah,
they shot some of Coming to America in his house.
Yeah.
Seriously. Yes. They shot some of... I follow Rosé, and he was showing videos of them shooting Coming to America, some of the scenes, in part of his house. So
that you can find that house on the internet. It is gigantic.
Yeah, look it up on Zillow.
Our man Chuck told me about it because he would go down there to Vander's house to do some interviews when he was at WSB and stuff, and just talking about how gigantic it is.
Monster.
Between a Vander setup, you know who all
Elijah on here to talk about it.
Yeah. Dominique has like to bring this back to brown liquor. If you look at any shot he does, like a Zoom call or a TV interview, the backdrop of his setup is just like, it looks like you're in a distillery with the top shelf.
Really?
Middle shelf. Like he's got all this like brandy and scotch and stuff, cognac and stuff. It's so unreal. He's sitting
with a bar behind him.
Yeah. And I think he's got his own cigar lineup. Ooh. And I know he just rolled out like a year and a half ago or 2 years ago now, his own brew as well. So
that's neat, man. Neat got all the got all the little stuff you like.
That's the
manly man.
That's the move these days, man. You get somebody that can make your brew. You know, the DJ, the Shock.
That's it. It was like they already got that Shock Top ale. Now they gotta have something like Shock Top.
There you go. Yeah. Call up Shock Top.
There you go. Copyright infringement right there, man.
No doubt. Need to holler.
Get on that.
Need to holler at them folks. They heard. Need to get some of that, player.
Shock, what's going on with the draft, man? You are monopolizing my Twitter timeline right now.
Yeah, it's a lot going on in the draft. Been a busy week. You know, I feel like I should be getting some kind of paycheck from Sears because I've been on all kind of Sears shows talking draft and Falcons doing some pre-draft stuff for them tomorrow. Then I'm doing a little stuff with them down there at Atlantic Station, being like an MC. They have like a draft party for, you know, that first pick at number 4. So
sweet.
It's been fun to talk about the draft and what's going to happen and everybody trying to figure out where everybody's going to go with trades, all this kind of stuff. So it's been fun, man. I mean, obviously, the quarterbacks are the biggest conversation of them all, mm-hmm. but You know, I think all the hype is going to happen, you know, between those first 10 picks for sure.
For an idiot like me, can you explain why this period is so long? I mean, I feel like we hear the same stories, this deliberation. At some point, it's just too much. It is just dragged on and on.
They drag it out because you think about it, once the bowl season is over, you get right into getting ready for pro days, combines, and it's just like a gradual thing. Each month has something.
You got to remember, the NFL programs themselves like a television network.
Oh, I know.
And they spread those things out, so they're almost exactly a month apart.
I know there's a reason. I know.
Like to hear it spelled out. It's a reality show. It's a reality show.
The National Football, literally, they want 12 months out of your year. You know, mm-hmm. they want to have your attention on them 12 months out of the year. And they have made it, like Mike just said, each month you're looking forward to something.
So they lose you for about 2 weeks right around the Masters and March Madness, and then you're back.
Mm-hmm. Here we are.
We'll give that to you.
Which I want to talk about. And then it comes the summertime with training camp and all that starts. Yep. So guess what?
Yep.
Mini camps.
OTAs.
Dude. Organized team activities.
Covering a team, those OTAs, the mini camps, that's when it all really starts to feel like it's all blending together. It's like Groundhog Day. It's like, what is this? Mini camp, OTAs, rookies are showing up for this one. It's like you get out there and you're like, how many first times are these guys going to report to camp? It's like it all starts to feel the exact same.
It depends sometimes on if you got a new coach. Because sometimes you got a new coach, you get an extra mini camp. So those guys are coming early. Then you have the rookies who will come back after the first mini camp. Because when you have a new coach, you usually have like two mini camps. They give mm-hmm. you an extra time with the team because you're a new coach. So that's why it seems like it's so long for some teams or some organizations, because that's how it goes down.
Yeah. Who's the first Georgia guy picked?
I say Azeez.
I think we've asked this question before, but
I like Azeez to go. I think Azeez to go first.
I'm saying Azeez. And I don't know. I mean, Mike, I don't know when this episode will come out, so we might be instantly.
We'll drop this before tomorrow night. All right. So notice I said drop. I'll get this done. I will get this done before tomorrow night. So we'll be legitimate. It will go out before the first pick.
I never doubt the
Jags are on the clock.
Never doubt your professionalism, but just you know, if we have an instant old takes exposed, you know that works. I think that works in our favor.
I'll tell you what we'll do is if we're wrong, then I'll cut the tease with us. I'll edit the tease accordingly to where it says like, I told you the Jaguars would pick, and then change it to Justin Fields.
Right. Trevor Lawrence.
Who do y'all think goes third, though? All the speculation of third. Who do you think goes third?
I don't think it's going to be Mac Jones.
I don't believe it's Mac Jones. I just don't believe it. It feels
y'all
like.
You hear my theory behind it? I got a theory.
Yeah.
Behind it
feels like a misdirection.
That's what I think.
So here's my theory. The San Francisco 49ers jumped all the way up to three. Now, why would they go to three? And I say because, one, you know, at four, the Falcons are not drafting Mac Jones. So if the Falcons aren't drafting Mac Jones, why do you need to go to three? Well, you go to three because you think the Falcons could possibly go for Lance or Fields. So that makes me feel like it's not Mac Jones, because you could have stayed outside of four, five. Five is the Bengals. They don't need a quarterback. Mm-hmm. Six is the Dolphins. They don't need a quarterback. Seven, the Lions. They just traded for Goff. Eight is probably a possible spot at eight with Carolina, but you didn't need to go all the way to three. You see what I'm saying?
So Did you see Carolina just move Bridgewater today?
Yeah, what about the Broncos? Right. The league sources, whoever broke that, said their sources are saying that the Broncos, even though they got Teddy, they still may look for a quarterback.
Okay, so John Elway ain't exactly distinguished himself drafting quarterbacks
as a GM. That right there is why there's a glimmer, I think, that the 49ers could have done something dumb and gone up there to get Mac Jones. But that's what the logical person thinks, is what Shock just said. They're not going to – if Mac is more than likely still going to be there, why go up there unless you're going for somebody like Fields or Lance?
And here's another scenario that I believe is going to happen. Here's what I'm thinking. So whoever San Francisco drafts, say they draft Trey Lance. From what I read today, the Patriots actually talked to the Falcons for that number four spot. So that tells you, I think they love Justin Fields.
The Pats? And
you're talking about right there with the Broncos.
You think the Pats love Justin Fields?
Yes. And oh, I think 9 and 8, well, you got two teams who want a quarterback, and the Pats are there at 15. They got to get in front of them.
Let me just throw something out there. And I'm not Adam Schefter. I don't know who their roster is. I don't know everybody they got on their team. Is it possible they're not drafting a quarterback?
Who?
San Francisco.
It could be.
That's not going to happen.
You don't think so? No way.
No. They're drafting a quarterback.
Okay.
I got a buddy who is in the scouting department, and he told me, he said, we better get the right one. That's what he said. Wait, he didn't tell me which one it was. He just
better get the right quarterback.
I'm one of those guys that when something doesn't make sense, I'm like, well, let's go in the complete opposite direction and throw that out there and see if maybe that sticks.
Yeah.
I think they're picking Ben Cleveland.
I believe in Occam's
country out there.
Dude, you talk about a mess up the draft. Everybody be like, what? Where did that come from?
That'd be like draft day.
Mike called it.
Hey, guess what? Our guest is here.
All right.
You want to go and we'll take a break and intro him, and then we'll get him in here?
Sure. All right, more Shock and Chip on the way with the voice of the Georgia Bulldogs, Scott Howard. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Shock and Chip, the voice of the Georgia Bulldogs, Scott Howard, joining us this evening. Scott, how are you doing, my man? Thank you for your time tonight. Glad to be graced with your presence and with your vocal talents.
What else am I going to be doing? I'd love to be hanging out with you guys. So it's a thrill a minute, I tell you what. Glad to be on the Shock and Chip podcast.
Shock and Chip and Scott.
It's very
we got all the S's covered.
It's all alliteration.
Mm-hmm.
Scott, man, first off, like Wes just mentioned, it's a pleasure, of course. I'm sure a lot of people would love to have the chance to sit down and talk to the voice of the Bulldogs, as I've had people come up to me and ask me, have I met you? Have I had a chance to talk to you? Because some people feel like you're like a folk hero. So it's fun to get this chance to talk to you, man.
That's kind of funny.
The one thing that I always wanted to ask you is, I mean, you've had the opportunity to see some of Georgia's probably craziest games, called the craziest game. You've been around these guys for years. What is it like to be in the moment to call, like, the Rose Bowl game? Like, is there, like, times where you think about, okay, if this happens, should I say this, or is it just purely organic?
Well, if you take the Rose Bowl, I don't think there wasn't any pre-preparation for if this happens, then say this. It was, and that's not, I mean, that applies really to probably every game. I don't pre-prepare a lot of things, and you just the old cliche, you call it like you see it, and try to do your best from that standpoint. But it's you get into the moment, you get caught up in everything that you're watching that's going on. You hope you don't stumble around too much and just trying to get your words out, and you can hold an audience and be entertaining and informative and all of that sort of thing. But I don't think you can pre-prepare for, you know, specific moments. Maybe if you have something you want to say at the end of the game, you know, maybe you write down some notes or something like that. You know, it's interesting, Shock, you bring that up. I don't know if you guys have seen the series that they're running on A&E now on the wrestling legends and those documentaries. I think it's 8 of them. Oh, yeah. And they're they're 2 into it now. Mm-hmm. Last week was Rowdy Roddy Piper, and I was a big wrestling fan as a kid. I think most boys are, to be honest with you, and some grown men, you know, still haven't let go of it. Tony Schiavone, but the thing with Piper,
well, that's that man's livelihood.
Piper, yeah, well, and very successful too. But Piper was a guy that was a great talker, and in this documentary, they showed just he had notepads of notes that he would take before, you know, they went on the air, before they would do a show, of things that he could say or that he might say, just different phrases. And he just had notepad after notepad of thoughts and ideas and things that he would write down before they went on the show. And then once they got into it, I guess it was, you know, it was kind of ad-libbed, and he would use a lot of the things that he had written before they went on the air. And, you know, some of that stuff was magic. Now, you know, that's a little bit different from live play-by-play. I don't know how much you can do that. There was one moment that I can point to. Mm-hmm. It was kind of funny that I actually thought of something that I wanted to say, and I wanted to get it into the broadcast at the right moment. And just about the whole season went by before I was able to use it, and it was when Crumpton was one of our receivers, and
it was the Georgia Tech game.
He finally caught a touchdown pass in our last regular season game against Georgia Tech, and Fromm threw him a pass, and it was like a 75 or 80 yard play or something. He went the distance and scored the touchdown. And just the phrase that had stuck with me the whole year, if this guy ever did anything in the moment, was straight out of Crumpton. And I finally got to use that. I was so excited. Oh, I finally get to use the phrase. And I remembered to use it
in the middle of the game of the year.
Outside of that, you know, it's hard to do that. It's hard to plan what you're going to say in those kinds of moments.
Scott, you know, when you don't have a list of things that you want to say and you are prepared in those moments, usually comes after a career that has prepared you for it and repetition. Where did you start your radio career? What was your entrance? What was that first thing that you ever got a chance to call behind the mic?
The first thing would have been I was a DJ first before I actually got to do sports. When I was a kid, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a disc jockey. I wasn't scratching though, Shock. I can tell you that. It was like, man, I wanted to play. You know, I wanted to play some 45s. I grew up, you know, around country music and in Nashville, Tennessee, when I was a little kid, and I lived there for 11 years, and I love listening to the radio. And I mean, it was, you know, Grand Ole Opry, hardcore country music. And I used to listen to WENO, 1430 AM every night. That was my favorite station. It was a country station in Nashville. But I was just so enamored with people on the air and the disc jockeys, especially the nighttime folks, because they seem to be a little less structured, I think, than most of the other day parts. But So the first thing I did in radio was outside of college was I was a disc jockey at a country station, and then eventually that evolved into being able to call sporting events. There were a lot of high schools, and I was in Milledgeville, Georgia, So it was probably a Georgia military prep school, high school football game. May have been my first live event back in 1986, maybe. That'd be my guess. But that's where, you know, that's where you cut your teeth.
I don't know. And this, no disrespect to GMC. GMC's stadium is like, it looks like it's been there since the 1980s. The stands still look the same. It's still got a very old school vibe to it, but it's a one of a kind of atmosphere, whether you're there for a high school game or a college game.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've been back there. I do remember seeing Garrison Hurst and Lincoln County roll through, though, when I was doing high school games. So that was exciting. He was a pretty big deal then, you know, coming in with the Red Devils. So that was an exciting moment to be able to do that. But I did a lot of high school games, basketball. You know, I mean, they used to play the boys and girls basketball doubleheaders. So we would set up in the bleachers and call both games. You know, you do the girls game first and then the boys game after that. And that's just what we did. And that's how we cut our teeth.
What's the advice that you give guys that's coming in? Because I know there's...
Don't do it.
I get the question all the time. Oh, you know, God. People stop you. You got to give them something, Scott. You got to give them something. I know they stop you at your local Kroger, Publix or something saying, hey, I want to do what you do. How do I get involved? How do I do it? Scott, give me some advice. But what do you tell these guys who berate you with the questions of wanting to be you?
Well, I don't know about that, but, you know, I mean, there are a lot of people that want to be in the industry and they want to, you know, they want to be broadcasters. How I did it and how it's done now are completely astronomically different. I mean, as we just walked through how I got started, you know, most people nowadays are doing what we're doing now. I mean, this is how they get started. You set up your own gear, you know, in your house and go to town. You can start that way. It's difficult to break into.
They usually go to Coffee Town. That's what they go.
You had some success with that. But it's vastly different. You know, I try to stay away from giving too much advice because I don't know how you do it nowadays. I really don't. It's a lot more work probably now just to get your foot in the door than it was, you know, 35 years ago when I was doing it.
Yeah, I think the more equipment that you have, the more that management expects you to be able to do. And a lot of times that just, you know, I think there is some testament to the way things like have traditionally been done with a team of people. I'm not saying the team has to be as large, but I think collaboration and having people that are specialized in doing that kind of stuff, I think that's a good thing for media, for radio, for television, for whatever. So I don't know. I don't know if we'll ever come back to that. I love good quality, and I feel like a lot of times quality may be sacrificed because of efficiency, but who knows? I'm fascinated by the trajectory of the industry, where it's going, where it's come from, and all that stuff.
You know, I haven't really set my foot in the podcast world, and I mean, I'm hardcore radio, and that's the way I was brought up. I don't listen to many things outside of just local radio, and trying to find that nowadays is really a challenge. Trying to find, you know, a local personality that you enjoy listening to, and not just sports talk, but just in general, just, you know, music radio or news radio or whatever it might be, just to try to find that local person that's in the community where you are and telling you important things that you need to know what's going on around you. That's pretty much a lost art now in just terrestrial radio, and it's changed so much, and I'm having a hard time letting go of that grip. I haven't really embraced you know, a lot of podcast listenership. I mean, I've listened to a few things, but that's not how I
shock and ship. How of course.
I guess ingest my broadcast information. I'm still turning the dial on my truck radio. You know, I'm looking for a good station.
Yeah, I hear you.
I think about when I was a kid and you're in bed at night. Like, you know, I grew up in Oklahoma, so a lot of times you were listening to either, you know, KMOX in St. Louis or WBAP in Dallas and like a Rangers game or a Cardinals game or something. And I don't feel like kids get that anymore, obviously. And, you know, maybe, you know, obviously, but it's a lot easier to listen to quality broadcasts now. It's just, it lacks a little bit of the romanticism that it used to have growing up. And I do kind of miss that.
I did that with the Braves. I mean, I used to love it when they were on the West Coast, when they were, you know, when the Braves were in the National League West, which made no sense whatsoever. But they would play the Giants and they would play the Dodgers. And I used to love those West Coast games because I could go to bed listening to the radio and listening to, you know, back in the 70s and listening to Ernie Johnson and in the early days of Pete Van Wieren and Skip Carey, you know, when they were that team. And I mean, that was heaven to me as a young teenage boy to go to bed listening to a baseball game in a town that wasn't mine. I mean, it was terrific.
Yeah, I would grow up listening to Larry and you and Lauren every Saturday. That was like my day to get my chores done. Most days I would have had a rec basketball game, and I'd come home before whatever game was going on, get my chores done, listening to the radio and listening to y'all. And I feel like Mike said, and like you said, you get inspired if you want to go into media by consuming media like that. And now, like, I don't know. I don't want to sound like back in my day kind of guy, but, you know, now what are people getting inspired by? Like TikTok influencers? Like, I don't know. It's like, it's just so crazy how much things can change, you know, over a couple decades.
Yeah, I don't know how much the TikTok influencers will be the talk of the town 10 years from now. I mean, you can bring up
that TikTok influencer during the Tennessee game.
You know, you can bring up a Munson moment where you were when you heard him make a call or something like that. That stuff goes on forever.
Yeah,
I'm not sure today's media can, you know, I'm not sure that applies to today's social stuff.
All right, Scout, I need some dirt on the man that stands next to you on those Saturday hot afternoons. We need some maybe a story, maybe something. We had to reach over and punch Zaire and say, hey, shut up. I'm trying to get this formation out. I mean, give us something on our man Zaire who resides next to you in the booth. I'm sure you got some really good, colorful stories about the guy, some times you guys have had.
That guy's awesome, man. I mean, he never steps on toes. He's and that's, you know, that's what my main concern was when I was paired with Munson for the first time in 1993. I was like, I want to stay out of his way. I don't want to say anything on top of him. I'll be over here in the corner. And you know, when Eric and I were paired in 2007. I mean, it's like we'd been working together all along. I mean, he's terrific. I don't really have any dirt on him, Shock. We tease him for, you know, not being on time sometimes. Our time, broadcast time, is different from being on time. It's like if you're not there early, then you're late. But, I mean, the guy's terrific to work with. I mean, he's, you know, as you know, he's so knowledgeable. He's just he's a great person. I enjoy our Saturdays and God, I'm trying to think. I just don't have any dirt on him. I don't have anything.
He's just
a
pro.
I'm expecting the next time I talk to him, you know, he's expecting another child. That's about it.
No doubt. Zai's got that big old Southern drawl that I love talking to Zai. You hear him talking, I'm like, You know he's from South Georgia.
One of the things that people don't realize, I think, about the broadcast and what you guys do is my favorite part of the broadcast is somebody who gets to see the behind the scenes part is you all have the best food in the press box.
We hear that.
I know you guys bring it in yourselves. Yeah. So talk a little bit about the little snack
everybody
bar that you guys have set up there.
Has the little buffet in the press line box. In the sandwich boxes. And radio crews got their own little stash going on.
Yeah, we don't eat food. We eat junk. you know, and that all started with our former engineer, Charles Youngs. His lunch, he wouldn't eat the press box food. He would always bring a big sub sandwich, like a bag of grapes. And he always brought Wheat Thins for Larry because Munson liked to munch on Wheat Thins. So over time, I just kind of picked up on that. I was like, we need something better than Wheat Thins. you know, and my go-to junk is cookies. So, you know, we get Oreos every week. And then, you know, usually on a Friday night on the road, that was our shopping night. It's like, okay, how much junk can we get? And, you know, what do you want? We got a big crew. We try to get a little bit of everything, what everybody wants. But you got to have double stuffed golden Oreos. And I've gotten into the Keebler double stuffed chocolate cookies, too. Those things rock.
I can attest to it because I remember, Scott, I know you remember. We were sitting next to you guys when the Arkansas game. And I looked over a couple times, like, they got all the snacks over there. I saw the double fudge cookies and everything. That's why I asked you about. I noticed something going on because you guys always have all the snacks. Look, Zyre's got two or three bags or something over here. I'm like, they got all the snacks. I wanted to come over there during the game and, like, I need a little something to pick me up.
That's the thing with Zyre. He tries to stay away from a lot of that sugar stuff. Because of it doesn't treat him nicely, but so he may have a different frame of mind on our snacks. But I can't have too many cookies. We'll buy three or four packs of cookies and maybe a salty snack. We'll mix that in there. But we got people coming in the press box at home, or at least we used to pre-COVID. It used to be kind of a social gathering, you know, in the radio press box. People were in and out, grabbing cookies, going on their way. In fact, at the spring game last week or 2 weeks ago, whenever it was now, you know, the coach's booth is right next to ours at Sanford. And Todd Monken saw our cookies in there, and he came in our booth and wanted to know if we had stock in Keebler. it's like, help yourself, man. They're wide open for you guys. If you know, you're at the stadium, you want a quick snack, we're glad to oblige. But that's where the snack thing kind of evolved from Charles Young's, and I wanted something a little better. I don't usually eat during the games on game day. I don't eat the press box food. I just try to stay away from that, but I will snack and I will drink a lot of Diet Coke.
So the Clemson game to start this coming up season, hopefully we're seeing more fans be able to come back, but you've got a few months to look ahead to that and look ahead to a season that is different from this past one where we only saw SEC competition. Saw Kirby on the Feinbaum show today talking about that game with Clemson and how historical it is and the rivalry that a lot of younger fans might not realize. What are your thoughts? What are you already thinking about that game? What are you looking about or reading about and looking into for that matchup with the Tigers?
I'll be honest with you. I haven't really started to dive into much prep on it. I mean, I outside of our team, I haven't really looked at Clemson guys, to be honest with you. And that'll come. I mean, that comes over the summer.
Well, I guess, I guess you haven't been doing research, but what are you looking forward to about the matchup?
I would personally just be working on pronouncing that kid who's their quarterback, his name, because that's a tough name right there. I remember watching that Notre Dame game thinking, like, oh, my goodness, these guys have to learn this name and then get it right a bunch.
You say it one time, and then the rest of the game is DJ.
the big quarterback
from Clemson.
That's what Larry
That young man.
Well, you could do, you know, Munson when we played, and not that he had a difficult name, but when Kentucky had Jared Lorenzen, Munson called him Godzilla just about the whole game.
Oh, my gosh.
And Godzilla back to pass. Godzilla. You know, everything was Godzilla, Godzilla.
Like, he I got to go back and listen problem. To that, man.
Although
that,
he, that's I mean, like... his name wasn't difficult to pronounce, but I the Clemson quarterback is a challenge.
He just gave him his own nickname.
That's right. He, you know, he was he did that every now and then, not a whole lot, but every now and then he'd come up with something funny like that. But I, you know, as far as the Clemson game, I'm glad they're playing it again. I mean, when I was in, you know, when I was in college, I mean, Georgia Clemson was, that was as big as Georgia Auburn. I mean, it was a big rival game, and it's a shame that, you know, we can't get that on a more regular basis. I understand why. I get all that, but I'm happy to see.
It's a fun game. I got a chance to play in it. My freshman and sophomore year. So the first one, my freshman year, it was at night, which was pretty cool. It was in Athens. And then the second year, we went down there, and it was, oh, I thought it was 117 degrees. We played at 12 o'clock. It was so hot in that ball game. Scott, I want to ask you last thing, obviously, for me, is we're talking about the draft. And we all talked about which guy we thought would be first off the board. Who do you expect to be the first dog that goes in the draft here this weekend?
Well, the stuff that I've read, and I mean, you get me into another pet peeve, and that's mock drafts. I mean, we've been doing mock drafts since January. It's like, oh, not another mock draft. but from the stuff that I have read, and there hasn't been a lot of it, so you guys are, I'm sure, a lot more well-versed in that than I am, but it sounds like Ojulari might be the first guy to go for Georgia. I don't know. I have no idea. I know we're going to miss him this year, though. I know that. He was tremendous last season. I mean, he put a cherry on top of his season with that Peach Bowl performance. But he could be the first guy to go if we have a guy goes in the first round.
Yep.
No doubt.
I want to change my pick. I want to go with Stokes being the first guy.
Speed. Speed kills.
Ooh, just got a feeling. Easy. Just got a feeling.
He's Stokes. He fast now. He's nice.
Just got a feeling.
Stokes.
Hey, Scott, before we let you go, this is a show favorite. Are you a fan of candy corn, my sir?
No.
Yeah! Another win. Another win for Shockley.
Who likes candy corn? That sounded a little too emphatic. I think Shock got to Scott before the show.
No.
Told him what to say.
No. Wes, are you a candy corn guy?
No.
Wes and I are candy corn guys. Oh, DJ is not a candy corn guy. DJ enjoys it when people, other people, share his beliefs. But Wes has just brought up one of the most talked about conspiracy theories of the 2020 election, is that DJ has been going through and skewing the vote totals on candy corn.
He's sending signed helmets to everyone that will say no.
Hand on the Bible. Hand on the Bible. He didn't talk to me first. That was candy corn's not my thing.
That's probably the first time that's ever been done in the history of candy corn or the Bible. Scott, Scott, thank you so much for your time. Great stories from a guy that's been around this program, around this team for a very long time. A lot of great memories, many more to come. Can't wait to hear you again this football season, and we'll do it again soon.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate that. Glad to be with you. And anytime you need a fill-in, just give me a call.